We were fucked up, but at one point I was like, I'm just gonna close my eyes. I'm so bored.
Welcome to Geeks Without God with Nick Glover, Tim Wick, and Molly Glover.
We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, we're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks, geeks without God.
This week on Geeks Without God, our returning guest is Pat Wick. She's here and we're going to talk about board games we've been playing lately, so listen.
We're geeks without God.
Hi, welcome to Geeks Without God. I'm your host, Nick Glover, joined as always by my co-hosts, Tim Wick.
Hello.
And Molly Glover.
That's me, Molly Glover.
And our returning guest this week is Pat Wick.
That's me.
Hooray.
Hey.
And Pat's here, and we're going to talk about some board games we've been playing lately.
Yes.
Yeah, we skipped our board game episode at OmegaCon last year.
Yeah.
Well, and you know, I mean, it's a good time to just kind of hunker down and play games with your friends and your family and just kind of stay inside.
We're all spending a lot of time at home.
We are.
Avoid large groups and stay inside and play
Most
board games.
Most board games are only 1 to 4 players, so that's generally the spread.
You know, if your Warhammer 40K map is big enough, you can maintain social distancing of 6 feet and still move all your figures around the terrain.
Pat and I live in a family unit of 4 people, and if any one of us contacts the coronavirus, all 4 of us are stuck in this house.
Yeah.
Yep.
So it's good to have games to play.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's always look on the bright side.
Yeah. Hooray.
Positive.
I have so many games in shrink wrap because of the nature of my job and the fact that we get a good discount on games, and so I buy them a lot, especially if I worked on it, but then having time to play it is another thing. It's a gift.
Well, you always say the shoemaker's children have no shoes.
Exactly. The shoemaker's children have no shoes, and I don't want to play any fucking board games.
But we still do. So, Pat, what's one of the games you've been playing lately?
Well, I know there's actually quite a few. I would like to speak about a cute little one that I found. It's called Trash Panda.
Oh, Trash Pandas.
All right.
I haven't heard of this one.
What kind of game is it?
Well, it is a card game, but the mechanic of how many cards you can play are set by rolling dice.
Oh,
so okay. It's a bit of can't stop.
You have sure.
So you have a 6-sided die, and each of the sides has what you can do, action that you can do. And it comes with 6 tiles, which, interestingly enough, match the sides of the dice.
Oh.
So you roll the dice, and if like the 2 trash cans come up, you take that token and put it in front of you. You can stop rolling at any time, because if you roll again and you get another one, great. And if you roll and get something you already have, you're bankrupt, go over, everything goes to the person.
So there is a world where you could get all 6 tiles and then play boom, 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 boom through all 6 actions, but that's going to be very rare.
Well, actually, it's only 5 tiles, because one of the 6 is basically a wild card.
Oh, sure.
Any of the ones that you haven't picked already, you can pick that. It's not like you can duplicate one.
Sure.
Well, I thought not just any of the ones you haven't picked. You could, like, play one.
Nope. Oh. You can't play one and then duplicate that. So basically, once
you're done rolling, that's when you say, now I'm going to play the tiles I have.
And now you're going to play the cards. Your turn. And the rest of it is the cards.
Okay.
Very cool.
So rolling the dice and having kind of a can't stop vibe to it.
Sure.
Chooses what actions you can do. Draw cards, play cards, steal a card. Since it's Trash Panda, you are raiding trash cans.
Because you're raccoons.
Because you're raccoons.
Is that like a discard pile?
No, that's actually the draw pile.
Oh, okay.
The draw pile is the trash can.
Got it.
Well, yeah, that's where you're getting the good stuff.
And then you put the cards into the woods where your home is.
Ah.
So that's where you're stashing them.
And that's very good.
Almost all cards have 2 things you can do with them. There's the point value if you stash the cards, and there's also an action value and an action thing that you can do for that. Like, you know, this card's worth twice as much.
Ah.
This card stops or blocks the steal. This card.
Oh,
so each one you have a choice of stashing them for trying to win, or keeping them because it can help you re-roll a bad roll or something.
Oh, man, sure. That sounds super fun.
It's really quick. It's super easy.
Like 15, 20-minute games?
Or maybe 15, 20 minutes.
Yeah. If everyone knows what they're doing and they're just playing, probably more like 10.
Is it two great. And up or three and up players? Do you remember?
2 to 4 players.
Oh, okay.
But I bet you could play with a little more, but you just it would go faster.
You need, or you would need like 2 copies or something, maybe.
Yes. It's just there's just the one set of cards, and when you're done with the cards, the game's over.
Oh, okay.
And the tricky thing about the scoring mechanic is almost all of them, it's, you know, you get this many points if you have the most of this kind of card.
Yeah.
But every one of those cards also has an action you can get, and you can't stash it. So you're trying to pay attention to how many of these cards are in play.
Because it tells you on each card how many there are. There's only 3 of these, and they're worth a little more.
There's a little bit of a Sushi Go angle to it.
Yes.
A little Sushi Go.
It's almost like trick-taking.
And it's collections in that way? Or
collect, well, like, whoever has the most of the Nanners card gets, say, 7
but
points.
But it's not like if you have to have 3 Nanners or you don't get any points.
Correct.
Okay.
It's just whoever has the most, and there's been games where, because people, you get into games where you're either playing a lot more cards to either save yourself or mess with other people, or you're stashing more cards.
Yeah.
So I've played games where out of, say, 9 cards of anything, somebody's won because they stashed 1. And everybody else was playing them. But you get the points for that.
Yeah, sure. Cool.
That's awesome.
And that game sounds super fun.
It is a small box. It's a little square box that's probably, I don't know, like 8-9 inches.
Yeah, yeah. Sure.
Throw in your backpack type game.
I like
gotta find that.
We have like we use those like square IKEA shelves, like Expedit or Caplock or whatever, for all our board games.
Sense.
And like 1 or 2 of the cubes of those is just small boxes.
Yes.
Like just, you know, Love Letter and,
or, hey, that's
and
my fish.
Sushi Go. All that stuff.
And, that's awesome.
Like, it's the kind of game that you can like carry along with you if you're going out, you know, to a diner at midnight.
Yeah.
And like,
I call them con purse games.
Oh, nice.
I'm always carrying a purse at con, but it's my smaller purse. It's not my whole big, you know, day-to-day lady purse, but like I can always fit like a small, you know.
Yeah, it's definitely a con purse game. Yeah.
That a purse for ladies who are just day-to-day.
My day-to-day lady purse. That's right. That's
right.
What
I'm more like a
most of the time. I'm a day-to-day lady.
That sounds like a super fun one. Tim, when Molly and I were talking about a game that we were playing recently, Tim said you both had also been fans of Dice Forge.
We played that for the first time just like a week ago with friends of the show Eric and Jess Thompson. And it was super cool. So I'm a game producer, which most people don't know what that means. But what it is it's a lot of project management. But the main thing I do is working to get the components of a game and to get them, like, all that cool stuff. Like in the Marvel Champions, the VAC tray, you know, all this, the bits of the game.
Right.
That's what I am dealing
game
with.
Game bits.
And trying to figure out what quality they should be, what they should be made of, that kind of thing. So, like, when we opened the Eric's copy of Dice Forge, I was like, this is fucking incredible.
The
back tray with all the little bits for everything.
Yeah.
The dice sleeve.
So,
beautiful.
Like, on its face, so people might be familiar with a deck builder game. Dice Forge is a die builder game where you have these like dice that are almost like Lego bits that have sides that can pop off and go on, and you can buy new sides for your dice to change what happens when you roll your dice every turn. So they have all these different bits and pieces, all these tons and tons of die faces, probably, I don't know, maybe like 100 die faces all together or something.
Could be.
And so they have this neat tray that they all fit into perfectly, and then the tray goes into a sleeve and there's an elastic band that goes around the whole thing.
And it comes with the band.
There is like every single little token, like the first person turn token has a slot in the VAC tray.
Yeah,
like every single component has a place where it goes in the tray.
Let me tell you, that shit's not cheap.
But the game is super fun.
Yeah, it's easy to learn too. And I don't know how. So what was your first impression when you guys played it?
I first played it at MegaCon, like a year or two ago.
Mm-hmm.
Had a really wonderful time playing it there. And the concept of like changing the dice out as opposed to just like swapping. I had ones where you swap dice for a better die, just like, oh, and you can take a side off and trade it around.
And you decide, and then it's where it is.
And the game actually goes really quickly because there's either 9 or 10 turns per person.
Yep.
I love the mechanic of everybody gets to do something on everybody's turn.
Yes. Yeah. It really helps. What we call it at work, we call it a phone syndrome, which is as soon as your turn's over, people are just like in their phone and they can't help it. You can't help it because you're like, I'm done. But Dice Forge, everyone is always rolling the dice.
You're always rolling the dice. You're paying attention. There's only so many sides of each or types of each kind. There's no limit to how many you can have except when they run out, they're out. Somebody could get all four of something on a four-player game. Yep.
So normally that is a type of game where because there's a limited number of each of the cards you can go get from each spot for your action. This is a type of game where I would normally play very aggressively and block people from having the option to get there's that tray you can buy that expands out your wallet, basically.
Yes. The gold
card. You can hold more gold. Yeah. You can hold more of everything.
You earn points for the gold.
No, not the gold one. You mean the one
that extends your extender for your track extender. Your resource extender.
Right. Yeah. So, like, I had an opportunity the first time we played to buy another one, preventing Molly from getting one, and I didn't because it was our first game and it was a friendly game and it was a dick move.
It was very kind of him to do this, and unusual.
But like, because we have a copy now. I am very much looking forward to playing a more aggressive, more my playing style version, of Dice Forge. Now that we're familiar with the mechanics, and no one's going to feel bad about getting absolutely crushed in a dick swing.
Not you, just anyone.
Actually, I found that it's pretty fun to play a two-player, four-player game.
Yeah.
As in, each person has two things they're going for.
Yeah. Sure.
And I've played it with a couple people. You're across the table from one another, and it's basically you play the right-hand side, and then you play your left-handed side.
Sure.
And then it goes to the next person, and they do one, and then they do the other, and keep going around. It's a little more interesting because you have the full game effect as opposed to, because if it's a two-player game, you have to take out half the taps.
Yeah, I read that. Yeah.
And a two-player game is nowhere near as exciting.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. That I like that a lot. I like house ruling things like that. You know, once you've played a game, you can be like, oh, no. We're not gonna do that. We're gonna do it this way. You know, like that's always, I really think that's fun.
We got the expansion for it as well, which we haven't touched yet, but I love unboxing and de-sprueing and putting away game components.
Yes.
It's very satisfying. and the expansion is very much the same, has a really good vacuum form tray, has a ton more dice sides, including some sides that don't go into the sleeve because they are starter dice sides. There's like three or four new sets of starter dice that you can choose to use depending on the game type you're playing.
Interesting.
And there's a ton of new decks and that you can swap around and stuff too.
The only thing that bothers me about this game is that the dice are almost exactly the same color. But they're different enough. If you look at them, one's a little grayer, one's a little greener, one for each. However, if you're going to go through the effort of having them two different colors, make them different colors.
Sure.
Do the hot dice, you know, the red crystal is the main one,
Suns
more
and
reddish,
moons. Yeah,
and make the other one more bluish and put all of the stickers or the other pieces that's like, no, these are the base set for the red die.
Right.
This is the base set. Because when you're done, you have to take all of the pieces off and put them all... the original ones back on.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the only thing. I mean, that I find a little bit annoying is actually removal of the pieces on the die and resetting.
You have to kind of stick a corner of one of the
you do.
Pieces
it's,
under there.
You do.
It's designed to do that.
I almost broke a nail trying to get the thumbnail.
That's my sole frustration with the game. It's a really fun game. But,
I noticed our new copy, the sides are way tighter to put on than on the copy we played over at Eric and Jess's.
Yeah.
I don't know if they just loosen up a little bit with time.
More? Yeah,
yeah. Probably.
Or if just like
different
the
pressing.
Molds changed or something. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I will say Nick accidentally called it Keyforge earlier, but that's because we've been playing Keyforge lately. And I've talked about Keyforge before, which is a card game that FFG does. Plays like Magic in the sense that, you know, cards are playing, are fighting each other and there's weapons and attachments and stuff. But I'm super excited because the mass Mass Mutation, which is the fourth set. Yeah. Set four is Mass Mutation, and that's coming out, which is crazy, and introduces the concept of dark amber. Amber is like the currency in the game. And so the idea in the world
almost
is...
almost like victory points.
Yeah, but the idea in the world is they discovered this dark amber that mutates everything. And so there's all these mutant creatures. Hmm. But also, I wrote a bunch of the flavor text for these cards.
Oh, cool.
And so, like, it was super fun. Like, they were like, we need you in here. We need comedians. And, like, so we were writing it, and then... the other day I wasn't able to help, and they were like, when there's not a comedian in the room, we can tell. Like, it's a lot harder. And it's like, yeah, yeah. But yeah, it seems like it's going to be really fun. I'm really excited for it to come out. There's been a lot of cards that I've wanted to talk about that I can't. So like, when it comes out, like,
we'll have to do a geeky boner episode all about Molly flavor text.
I'll find all my cards and read them out loud. And you guys can tell me how funny I am.
Have you two played Keyforge at all?
Not yet.
I have not.
So, every single deck is unique and has a unique name printed on the deck and on the back of every card is so, yeah. And they're all like procedurally generated.
You buy
by
a
some
deck, no one else has that deck in the whole world.
Right.
Oh, okay.
And I mean, so there's like one common pool of cards that all of many different, you know, groups or teams, mm-hmm. or suits,
yeah,
that the decks are built from. And yours will always have three of those different suits or teams.
And the names are generated by an automatic like name generator that we've plugged a bunch of words into.
And they're hilarious.
And they're very hilarious. And so for the holiday party, end of the year gift, we all of us employees got a deck that was our own personal deck. Just it was randomly generated, but the names are randomly generated. Mine was awesome. It's Molly Glover the Atomic. Which is amazing. But then like some other ones were also funny. But the best thing is like, okay, so when they first were doing this, they put a bunch of words in the thing and then it popped up some really unfortunate titles. because a lot of them will be like, you know, funny name, like Garbsbringer, the one who loves light. Or something, right?
Okay.
Just weirdness. Weird names. They're very weird. But sometimes it'll be like Garbsbringer, the priest who loves boys. and we're like, nix that one.
I think I saw a picture of a deck on Reddit that was like, because there are colors in the word pool or whatever.
Yeah.
And so one of them was like, the Wizard of White Power or something like that.
No.
I was like, oh.
No, bad idea.
Take a few of those words out of that pool.
Yeah. It's like, so then we were like, okay, I think going forward, we need to make sure that there aren't any humans as object nouns.
That's probably a good idea.
But the game is super fun and really easy to learn.
It's a fun two-player game. Yeah.
And it has Roman dinosaurs.
I'll buy you guys a two-player starter so you can play. I think you'd enjoy it.
Down, I'm in.
Yeah,
it has Roman dinosaurs.
It does have Roman dinosaurs. Crucible is another planet. These are dinosaurs that one of them, dinosaurs, the idea is that dinosaurs were yeeted off our planet into this planet. And then when they landed, they decided to create their own society, and their society is ancient Rome.
So on that place, you could have Jesus riding a velociraptor. Mm-hmm.
Yes!
It's,
absolutely.
Et tu, Bronto? Pat, what's another one you've been
Well,
playing?
I know Tim and I have been doing a lot of Wingspan.
Which I keep wanting to call Birdemic the game, but it's not.
No.
It's not.
I haven't played that yet, but I've heard such good things.
It's a really good game.
A lot of friends that have said a lot of good things about it.
And I realize it's got birds in it, so sure. I can see why Nick wouldn't want to play.
It doesn't have bird sounds.
Yeah.
It does not.
Do you have to make bird sounds?
I will be making all the bird
sounds. There's no requirement of bird sounds.
So the only reason I'm not playing the game is Molly. Great. Good.
I would. Yes, that's probably true.
Yeah.
That game is put out by... Stonemaier Games, which is the same company that did Charterstone.
Oh yeah.
And that guy, Jamie Stegmaier, is a super cool dude, and he's really into, like, it's very much, his company reminds me a lot of like the early days of Fantasy Flight, where it's like one guy in charge with a very small, nimble team that's doing really innovative stuff, and I'm really excited to see what else comes out. But what about Wingspan do you love?
It's a resource allocation game and a worker allocation game.
Okay. Worker bee game.
I mean, obviously the skin is done through like getting, you know, laying eggs, getting more birds.
Mm-hmm.
Getting more food.
Training your bird army.
You basically, you're training your bird army. You've got four actions that you can do. You can train a bird or get a bird. Mm-hmm. You can get food. Yeah. You can get food. Mm-hmm. You can lay eggs, mm-hmm. or you can draw more cards.
Does laying eggs end up getting you more birds?
Yes.
Well,
okay.
And other things.
What?
You never hatch the eggs. They're in-game currency.
Oh.
Yeah.
You're trading your babies?
You're feeding more?
You're feeding your eggs to other birds sometimes.
Holy that shit. That is true. Yeah.
That's fucked.
But the thing is once you play your birds on various on rows. So say you've got your food row, right? And you play your first bird, and each bird that you play means that when you play that row again, two things happen. One, you get more of that resource.
Okay.
So the longer you go in the row, the more food you get.
Yeah.
But two, the birds have powers that activate when you use that row.
Oh.
So you get food, and then you get to use all the powers of the birds in that row.
Bird powers.
So, yeah, bird powers. So the more the further you get in the game, the more actions you get out of a single action, I guess is the best way of putting it.
The more benefit you get out of doing a single action.
So then
that's really cool.
So
there's three types of powers. There's the power when you first play the card. There's the power that every time you say activate it. So like if you play it in the trees, that's mostly where the gathering food is.
Mm-hmm.
So every time you gather food, you gather more, and mm-hmm. most of their special powers are that way.
Okay.
And then there's also powers that are when somebody else plays something, you can get a benefit.
Oh, sure.
Each bird has one of those three. Either use immediately, and then you don't get it anymore. The ongoing one, or ongoing, but it depends on what other people do.
Like, my favorite powers are the birds that are the raptors or the meat-eater birds.
Yes.
Where their power has stuff to do with eating smaller birds.
So the mechanic is draw the top card, flip it over, and if it's smaller than whatever number,
50-centimeter wingspan, dinner.
Oh,
and you
cool.
get a victory point because your raptor
because you ate something.
That's awesome. Yeah,
but if it's bigger, you don't get it.
It gets away.
Well, that's not your bird.
There's always a bigger bird.
There's always the whole you're an Andean condor.
Yeah.
Nice to see you.
Bye. The bird is too big for your mouth.
Yeah.
It's not your bird.
It's not your bird.
That's not the one I was looking for.
That sounds good. That sounds
Yeah, once you know how, I mean, teaching it can take a little while. Once you know how to play it, it goes pretty fast.
Yeah.
Probably 45 minutes to an hour.
If everyone knows how to play, yes.
Yeah.
And as long as nobody's sitting on their thumbs hemming and hawing over, I don't know.
Analysis paralysis.
And we have the European expansion, which we have not added in yet.
There's mid-game challenges as well.
Okay.
At the very beginning of the game, because you know you're going to go through your worker bees, your little tokens,
mm-hmm.
Four times. And at the end, I do one, Tim does one, you like go around mm-hmm. the table until all of your little worker drone bees or little cubes or action cubes are done.
Sure.
And then there's a mid-level, or that level, you also give points based on who has the most of something, and it's, you basically draw a tile out to put it down, so it could be who has the most birds in the water area. It could be the most eggs laid.
So you never know.
Well,
you know what's in there, but you don't know what's going to come up.
At the beginning of the game, you know what all four are.
So you can actually be planning ahead.
But do you know when they're gonna activate?
Yes.
Yeah, you do.
The end of the first time, the second time. So you have all of them.
So it's not like, I don't know if you ever played Mario Party, which is a video game where
it's not Mario Party.
Categories, but you don't know which one it's gonna be.
No,
you know ahead of time.
Okay, cool.
So sometimes you're like, I'm right now like this one, we're working on who has the most birds that were laid in the water, or played in the water, but the very next
laid
one,
in the water.
Yeah.
But the next one is the most eggs in a specific kind of nest.
And there's no way I'm going to beat Tim with birds in the water, so I'm going to focus on
I'm going to start
eggs.
Working on the nests.
Yeah,
nests. Yeah.
That makes sense.
You said European expansion, so in the main game are all the birds
North America?
They're all North American birds. So the European expansion adds European birds and adds new powers. So anyway.
That sounds great.
It's a really cool game, really, really fun. We played it a lot.
I like resource worker allocation, terraforming Mars.
I am very excited for Fallout Shelter, which is coming out soon, which is worker placement and resource generation. And it's going to be so good. Like, it's a super little, simple game. You don't have to know anything about Fallout to enjoy it.
Okay.
If you've ever played the Fallout Shelter phone game, it's based off that. But it's like, it's very similar where you're working together to build a Fallout shelter, but you have your own level of the shelter where you're building rooms. And if other people use your rooms, you get some resources.
Yes.
And so it sounds similar to that, where there's like, you can earn things based on what other players do.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
But one thing that I like about this is that you are not... My action of like hunting on a bird is not going to really affect anybody else. Mm-hmm. And the only thing is, if you're going to take the card, I took the card ahead of you, but it's random. So it's not like anything I do affects anybody else
right.
in sure. a negative way. There are cards that are, you know, the more expensive the card is to play, the better the reward is. So some of them are easier, you know, smaller rewards. Oh, look, there's a cat. How'd that happen? But say you're also... Like, every time somebody does something, everybody, not just you, gets a benefit.
Hmm. Yeah. So
that, but there's not a... Yeah. Kitty didn't like that. Also, what a shock.
Yeah.
Sorry.
It's
those...
like a midnight towing of cats.
Probably more interesting.
Yes, definitely. Yeah. That was already more interesting than half of cats.
So, yeah, there's not attack
That's cool.
cards. No, it's, That's really, cool. it's really fun. So, a two-player game versus a four- or five-player game... isn't that much longer if everyone's playing, and it doesn't really affect anybody else's actions.
Nice.
Yeah, Pat and I have played a couple of two-player games. When we play two-player games, we can just hammer through that game really fast.
Yeah, yeah.
Just hammer right through the birds.
Just hammer right through the birds.
Just
go right through them.
Make a slurry.
The birds, getting laid in the water.
Lay them in the air. Fun.
We're so 10-year-old.
I keep all my eggs in my nest, too.
Yeah.
I think we can fit one more game in before we go to five questions, probably.
Yeah. Okay, I got one.
You got one?
I have a game that I kickstarted called Parks, which is a game based on the national parks.
And it's arrived now? You've played it?
Yeah, we've played it a few times.
Yes.
It's a worker bee placement kind of game.
Yeah.
But it's got an interesting mechanic because you're basically going on hikes through the park, and everybody's got two hikers, and they each can only go down the path once.
Oh.
But you can only have one hiker on each space.
Okay. A little bit like Takedo.
Yeah.
Sure.
So there's no die rolling. You can actually move your hiker as far as you want. You can move it all the way to the end of the path
the
if you wanted
to. Enjoy the park.
But there are actions on the path that you can that you wanna do. So then it's a question of, well, do I hang my hiker back? Mm. So hopefully the space that I really want to be on is gonna open up, or do I jump my hiker forward?
You can't share space.
No, yeah. You can't. Yeah. Unless you have a campfire token. So you can have two hikers on a space if you got a campfire token.
Sure.
But you only get one campfire token.
Ooh.
So you gotta really decide when you're going to do that.
It's a one and done kind of a use thing.
Yeah.
So you can run through the national park as quick as you want and just hit the highlights, or you can take your time and experience
and
all the things there are
the
to experience in the national park,
and sometimes,
just as long as there isn't some dickhead already experiencing them in front of you.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Only one to look at that geyser.
What do you do with your resources?
Well, I mean, what you're actually doing is gathering tokens, resource tokens, you know, sort of like eggs, only in this case they're suns and water and mountains.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you use them to visit national parks.
Basically the buy the card. Like in Splendor and
call
it visiting a park
sure.
to get the card, but it's the same.
Yeah.
Harness
that's
the power of
point.
The sun to move to a new
location
in the United States.
Yeah,
yes.
It's really great.
Solar powered vehicles.
But it's very environmentally conscious.
All the parks in there?
No,
what?
But
an expansion.
But there's an expansion that I also kickstarted.
FFG cash grab.
Yeah, I know it is, and I did kickstart the expansion, and that'll probably show up in about 6 months or something because it just got done.
I just kickstarted a game that the campaign's still going for another 3 weeks, but there's this comic that Molly and I both read that we absolutely loved called Mind Management. It's MindMGMT.
It's trippy as well.
It's a very confusing story about psychic warriors of various flavors living among us.
It's kind of like there's a government agency that recruits people who have like supernatural abilities, like in terms of telekinesis,
but it's
telepathy.
Oh, so it's really real. It's based on reality.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Very real. Right.
Very
but,
real. Imagine if MK Ultra was like, you know, going on still today.
There are like riddles and codes in all the margins of the comic, and like there are pages that you have to look through like a red lens to see the hidden art in, like, because it's like a 3D glasses type deal, and there's all sorts of incredibly fine detail in this book where there's a story being told in the margins that later on you find out is like a character's journal and their backstory and stuff like that. Like, it's a beautiful comic. It's just like three hardcovers or four hardcovers. So the guy has done two Kickstarter projects. The last one was an LP with a comic book that had codes and a story that it told as you read the comic that also had audio messages and hidden things in the LP that went along with the story.
That's cool.
And now he's doing a hidden movement board game, like maybe like Whitechapel-ish in terms of hidden movement.
Where nice.
One person plays the recruiter for mind management and the other players are playing the people trying to stop them from recruiting their psychic monks and whatever they might have.
Kickstarting games is really addictive. It's bad. I just kickstarted a Dark Tower.
Oh yeah,
the game, remake. Yeah. The remake of the Dark Tower, because I used to play the shit out of that game.
Yeah,
it's like this. I mean, it was like one of the first electronic games. There's this tower in the middle of the board.
Let the computer decide and who lives and who dies.
You got to program in each move that you make, and then
that's pretty crazy.
Yeah,
I never played it, but I remember the commercial from a computer.
No, I played it.
Yeah, I just kickstarted a game called Cleocatra, which is there are cats that you need to rescue from the pyramids. And so it's like a tile puzzle game where you're fixing cats and pulling them out, and it looks super cute. But I don't usually kickstart board games for reasons, but this one looked really good. I do love kickstarting board games and then seeing when they run into the troubles, because it's a lot harder to make a game than you realize.
Yeah.
And it's pretty great.
They make their game and they made so many copies and they didn't make a dime.
Or it's more like, oh yeah, we're going to do all these stretch goals. And then it's like, it turns out manufacturing this shit is hard.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's expensive. We didn't have a manufacturer we're already working with in China. Yep, yeah. Yep. Awesome.
Oops.
So those are some games we've been playing or are excited to play. Pat, you have five questions for
us.
Five questions for
us. So many questions.
Let's do it.
Okay. Since I come on here not as often as I initially would like sometimes, I always write way more questions. Yeah. Joe, I can just figure out which ones I'm going to do.
Sure.
Yeah. And so I've got this.
You can always send them in to 5 questions.
I could.
Yeah.
Expansions.
Okay. Yeah.
What expansion, it's kind of a two-part, is worth it and not worth it for anything? Anything you've done?
My gosh.
Okay. So I will say that the game Runebound, third edition, is like a competitive fantasy board game where you're adventuring and you're moving to different places and you're going on quests and, you know, eventually you're gonna fight the big bad. And there's an expansion for it called, what is it called? Something Bonds. I can't remember. I worked on it, but I can't remember. But that expansion, makes the game cooperative.
Mm-hmm.
And turns it from competitive to cooperative.
Okay.
And that is an expansion that I feel like is super worth it because it gives you like a whole second game.
Right.
Instead of it being like, oh, it's more content for this competitive game. It's like everything you have, now the game is cooperative. So you can play it two ways. And I think that is super cool.
Does it work with other expansions too?
No, it's just for that. Okay. It's just for that.
That's neat.
But yeah, so it's an expansion that adds a bunch of content, but also then takes the scenarios from the base game and makes them cooperative. So it's a really cool way to experience a game twice.
My answer for both of that is the same game.
Oh,
it's the Marvel Legendary deck builder game. So there have been so many expansions to this because there's so many Marvel characters and Marvel properties that you can add character decks to and villains and all that. And then there are other versions of the game. Like there's a Marvel Villains version where you're playing as the villains. And technically all of those cards are interchangeable with the Marvel Legends game. The expansions are super hit or miss, and a lot of it might depend on like who your favorite characters or what your favorite properties are, but some of the mechanics are completely within a set. Like there's no reason to take any of the Guardians of the Galaxy characters and play them with any other characters.
Which kind of sucks.
Unless you were doing an entire Guardians of the Galaxy team against a Guardians of the Galaxy villain. Because they deal with this Infinity Stones mechanic. All the cards deal with an Infinity Stones mechanic. None of the other expansions or cards deal with an Infinity Stones mechanic.
So it's almost like its own standalone game.
It kind of is.
But you need the entire game to play it. But some of the expansions are just adding new characters, just adding new villains, or just adding like a couple new concepts or whatever. And so it's so frustrating because like I have this completionist like I want to get them all and organize that. I bought like a wooden box and I painted the inside all red and the outside black and
printed off these dividers.
Made like custom art dividers for all the characters because the box they come with won't fit everything.
Right.
And then like the last few expansions we bought were so disappointing that I just stopped. But when we were over at Eric and Jess's the other day playing games, I noticed there was a big X-Men box for Marvel Legends. I was like, oh man. I want X-Men. I want more X-Men for my Marvel Legends, but I don't know if I'll do it or not, just because they've been so inconsistent.
All right. For me, we just got an expansion for Seven Wonders over the holidays. That was the Armada expansion. I'm not going to spend a lot of time explaining it, but it is a really cool expansion.
Cool.
And then I will go further to say that the Babel expansion for Marvel Legendary Seven Wonders is shitty.
Ah.
So don't play that one.
Cool.
But get Armada because Armada is really cool.
Everybody loves boats.
Yeah.
All right.
It integrates to a regular, it integrates into the game you're already playing as opposed to having you stop and do something different for a while.
Got it. Yeah, that can make a big difference.
Yeah. All right. So something silly like what's your favorite gaming snacks?
Ooh.
Hmm.
Favorite gaming snacks. Okay. I like to be a trash monster when I'm playing like a long board game session, and I don't usually eat a lot of junk food, but I like to eat Cheetos with chopsticks.
Yeah.
Because then you're not getting them on your fingers.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And you're not marking up the game components. But you get to be like, oh God, I'm a fucking monster. I'm going to eat this whole goddamn bag of Cheetos. Or salt and vinegar potato chips. Those are my go-tos.
Oh, nom, nom, nom.
Those are my go-tos, and they are both best enjoyed with chopsticks.
Mm.
Yeah.
I don't drink that much or that often, but I do enjoy like a good alcoholic beverage, something pre-mixed for board gaming. And there's just something about it. Like it kind of makes me think of like cowboys sitting around a table playing poker, drinking whiskey, except for, you know, like I'm drinking a mojito
and you don't know playing how to ride
Catan,
a horse.
And I don't know how to play ride a horse, right? And yeah.
Also, you loosen up as you get into the game.
Yeah, a bit.
And it just kind of like everything just starts to feel more,
But board gaming is one of those social circumstances where I am more inclined to have a drink than usual.
Mm-hmm.
I like to have some salty and some sweet. And I mix it up. You know, like I like chips. I like a lot of different kinds of chips. And sometimes I'm in the mood for just plain old potato chips and sometimes Doritos and sometimes Cheetos. And then maybe some Starburst. So there's like a fruity sweet.
Clean all the Cheeto out of your
And maybe your maybe yeah. some Tootsie Rolls. So there's a chocolatey.
Yeah.
So, but I try to like get just like a little
sugar wax,
a little bowl of treats. And that's my treat for that game.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I try not to overdo it.
That's good.
You know, but anyway, that's me.
What about you, Pat? What's your deal?
I often do some sort of a salty crunchy.
Mm-hmm.
Either chips or pretzels I often go for.
Mm-hmm.
And then a little pile of candy that's not wrapped but not gooey.
Oh.
Yeah.
So,
okay. Sure. Nothing sticky.
M&M's.
Yes. Like
Skittles.
Skittles, jelly beans, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Hot tamales.
When we would play D&D, we would always get a ton of shitty Chinese food delivery and then just be like feasting on like noodles and delicious kung pao while we're deciding how many people we're murdering.
Yeah.
Murder hobos.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
Number three.
Okay, number three. What is, and this is an or question, your either favorite or least favorite game mechanic?
My favorite is a traitor mechanic, like in Battlestar Galactica or The Resistance or Spyfall, traitor, where you are a traitor, a secret traitor, and you have to do things that maybe do or do not imply that you are a traitor. I like that a lot. My least favorite game mechanic is anything that requires like military strategy or like dudes on a map, and I have to know, like Risk. I'm terrible at Risk. I'm not good at anything that involves like what you might consider to be like a military strategy. Mm-hmm. That's my least favorite.
All right.
I'm not a big fan of having to organize or figure out cards like on the fly in the middle of a game. Like I don't like any game where hand management becomes like a part-time job and gets in the way of you playing the game.
I know what you mean.
Yeah, and there are a bunch of different games that can be that way, and even some games that aren't necessarily that way, but like depending on how luck treats you or how your strategy is, it might turn into that sort of thing, and that's frustrating and gets in the way of the fun for me, and it makes it feel like work.
Okay.
I'm not a big fan of any game that relies too heavily on random chance. Mm. So I think Risk is a good example of that, where you can have like a massively more powerful army, but because the die rolls go badly, you lose.
Yeah.
And it's like, I don't mind a little bit of randomness. I think Dice Forge is a good example of that, where there's randomness, but if you are doing a good job replacing the faces of your dice, then you have a much better chance of always getting something that's advantageous to you. Mm-hmm. And you're making choices on how to improve your random chance.
Yeah.
But when you've got a mechanic where it's just purely like, if the dice don't work out for you, you're fucked, and all the good strategy just goes to hell, that's not enjoyable to me.
You would not like Mario Party.
Yeah. I have one of my coworkers is a big board gamer, and his wife refuses to play any games with dice. She just has atrocious dice luck, and it's that's frustrating fair. For her, and so she won't.
Yeah.
She's not, doesn't do it.
Yeah, for me, my most irritating one is when you find out there's a secret goal, but nobody knows what it is until the end. So it's like, take a card out, put it in this envelope, and at the end of the game, take it out, and all of a sudden, especially when they're super, super powerful, you're like, oh, whoever managed to do this thing halfway through the game won, but you don't know that.
Would hate Mario Party.
How do you feel if everyone gets a secret objective and you know what yours is, but you don't know what anyone else's is?
I think those are fine.
I'm down with that because you can actually watch other people and kind of get an idea of what their secret goal is, and maybe thwart them, or maybe just go, I know what their secret goal is, and they're doing super well, so I'm going to have to do something to...
The game I designed has those, and a lot of people hate them. And I think that's very interesting. A lot of people, like, really hate it. Like, I'm like, just play without it.
It's not that hard.
No, just the ones that are, like, the winning condition, nobody knows till the game's over.
Yeah, that's Mario Party 100%. Yeah.
It's someone once described Mario Party as a 2-hour coin flip.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
All right, question four.
Yes, question four. Most irritating packaged game, like overpackaging or badly done. I have such pet peeves over games.
What's yours?
One of my games that I adore, it's called 25 Words or Less.
Mm-hmm.
The box is literally one of the, shows my age now, like the Trivial Pursuit edition card thing.
Yeah.
It's that small thing, a sand timer, and then a small playing field that doesn't even need to be as big as it is.
Okay.
And the thing is almost the size of a box for Clue.
Yes, the old board game style where everything has to go in the, like enormous rectangular and flimsy box.
And there's no reason to do it that large. Yeah. It irritates me.
Yeah. My least favorite is honestly anything that's in, I've always hated since I was a kid, those like you said, like Clue or Monopoly, those long, thin boxes, and the cardboard isn't very thick. So they always split at the edges.
Oh yes.
And if you stack like 3 or 4 games high,
it just feels like it's just not designed in a way that like square boxes are gonna keep their integrity better.
Mm-hmm.
And it just seems like it's designed to rip, right?
I don't think they're actually designed.
Right, yeah. That, and like, I also don't like when there's, like you just said, like when there's too much empty space. If you can pick it up off the shelf and shake it and it's rattling around like crazy, like, that usually means that there's too much space in that box.
The anti-Dice Forge.
Yes, yes.
A game we love that has a really, kind of has some poorly designed box and containment features is crap. The Racers one.
Magical
the
Athlete.
Magical Athlete. So Magical Athlete has little cardboard standees that go into a plastic base.
Yeah, like a
None of the standees are thick enough to actually fit in the base.
They didn't test it.
And so our box has like a bunch of little tiny folded slips of paper to like wedge in there with the cardboard to hold the pieces up.
Everyone's game does.
Everyone's
Lori is the one who introduced it to us, and hers has it that way.
Yeah.
Like, sure.
It's just,
And so like it has a bunch of little cardboard standees, it has a deck of cards, and it has like point tokens, and it has no organizational management.
Oh, yeah.
But there is like a cardboard insert. And all it does is make it so that it's possible to not fit everything in the game one little plastic base is flipped in the wrong direction.
Yeah.
I'm surprised I haven't just taken out the cardboard insert and just been like, there, it's a box of shit.
Yeah.
Because that would be better than having a cardboard insert.
That insert is only for any game that has like a cardboard insert like that, it's there for stability during shipping.
Sure.
It's not there for as a storage solution.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For me, it's the classic Axis and Allies game.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, it's one of those games where random chance determines who wins. So I have a problem with it because of that. But the thing is, it is in this huge box. It doesn't need to be, and like every member of every country has their own little styrofoam container that their pieces go in. Mm-hmm. But the box is so much bigger that you put those styrofoam containers in there, and if you like jostle the box at all, all that shit's going to be in every other container. So the first thing you do, first thing you do every game is just get all the pieces back into the right container. So that's mine.
You need to buy a bunch of Ziploc bags.
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, that's terrible.
When they're filled and they sit in front of you, it's like, oh, you know exactly how many what things you have, except that you have to do that every time.
Oh my gosh, that's the worst.
Sometimes like companies like Broken Token make a cool organizer or insert for those games that fix that problem.
Yeah, there's a secondary market for that stuff,
like,
for sure.
There's a company called like Game Trays with a Z that makes
they're cool.
They make custom vac form trays for games cool.
Question 5.
Okay, so a game from the past, maybe out of print or maybe not, that you think needs an update or revamp.
Mousetrap.
Ah, yes.
Mousetrap was my favorite game as a kid. I played it by myself. If you haven't seen
it. Yeah, of course you do.
It is the Rube Goldberg game.
Yes, it
basically.
Is.
Basically, you're building a Rube Goldberg to trap a mouse.
And it's 100% random chance.
Yes, and the mouse isn't even moving. The mouse is just going to wait patiently for you to drop the thing
mouse.
Down on it.
It's the dumbest fucking mouse.
And my brother and I played it all the time. We tried to like rearrange bits. We tried to, I would love to do a Mousetrap revamp. And maybe like update it so that there's like, it's not just like you're building the same Rube Goldberg every time.
Over and over
like,
again.
But like you're building maybe different things depending on what happens in the game. I think it'd be really cool.
That would be great. There was a game I used to play with some friends called the Bermuda Triangle.
Ooh.
And you would move your ships around in the Bermuda Triangle, and every now and again a storm would pass over. And the trick was that the storm had little magnets inside, and there were magnets on top of your ship.
Huh.
So if the right part of the storm passed over your ship would disappear.
That is so cool.
And that was kind of fun. But
yeah,
I mean,
remember how much we used to talk about the Bermuda Triangle?
Yeah. But then it turns out it's nothing. Anyway, but I want that game back. But I seem to remember that the mechanic beyond that was useless and dumb.
Sure.
So I do want a game where, you know, there's a storm that moves over your ships and your ships just disappear.
That's very cool.
It's an old game. It did get revamped, but they didn't really change anything. Survive Escape from Atlantis.
Oh, yeah.
It's like the island sinking as you're...
Yeah, we have that game.
Yeah. I love it. It's super fun. There are a bunch of... like third-party expansions for more players or to add sharks or whatever.
Yeah.
The heck. But I feel like the meeples, I'll have the number for the points on the bottom. There's a lot of really awkward component parts of that game. I feel like someone could come along and remake that game and reskin it and improve it and make it less awkward to play, and it would be super fun. And I would like to.
That'd be fun.
Sweet.
What do you think?
Escape from Mars.
Mine is actually Operation.
Oh.
Yeah.
Because people actually get shocked.
Well, there's could be so many different things.
Oh, yeah.
With
sure.
It. it was oddly enough a game that I wanted to have as a kid, but my parents were all like, "Oh, we're not going to get that game because it's nothing like Operations." And we're like, "That we had not."
That's so funny.
I played it and all, but it could be so much more interesting.
Yeah.
If you did something to it, but that the mechanic and the pulling things.
Yeah.
Out, just like I'd really like to see somebody do something different.
It is also almost fucking impossible.
I love
for
that
a
game.
Lot of it.
Oh, I love it.
There isn't. Are there any new, like, steady hand games, like Don't Break the Ice or Jenga or, yeah.
And you can still get Operation. It's still out there.
Perfection was the game that gave me nervous breakdowns as a child. Do you remember that one?
Because the ticking?
Where you're putting, it's ticking. Yeah. You're putting all the shapes in and then eventually it just explodes. Yeah.
Where you have two pieces that you've got to put together and then put it in.
Yep.
Oh, Superfection. Nice.
Yeah. Awesome. I would love to see Operation, but like on a huge scale, like the way they have huge Catan and like huge.
Oh, they probably have it.
Like,
Burning
I'm talking
Man,
like right,
like a pool table.
I want to see like a 20-foot operation board where you have to use both hands on like a tongs.
No.
Like, and you're standing up on a step ladder to like lift things.
You
out.
Need to like a crane operator,
right? Yeah,
to like pull the pieces out.
Yep,
and that sounds awesome. Hand. That kind of thing, but
don't touch
update.
The sides.
Do something else.
Yeah, that'd be great. Those are good questions.
Awesome. Thanks, Pat. We're always interested in hearing about what board games you all are playing as well. If you have something exciting coming up or something that's a recent favorite or something we've just never talked about. And when we talk about board games, let us know. We're always looking for new stuff to play. Otherwise, if you are a Patreon supporter, you probably heard this episode weeks early.
Lucky you.
Yeah.
And if you're not a Patreon supporter, you could be. And you could be listening to the new episodes weeks early. It's just a couple bucks a month and you get all this way early and some extra stuff. All this.
Oh, yeah.
Otherwise, you could, if you want to support us, you could follow us on, Facebook or Twitter, or give us a rating on whatever streaming media platform that you're getting our podcast through, like iTunes.
Tell your friends about us.
Yeah. Tell your friends about us. Otherwise, we've been Geeks Without God, and we'll be back next week with another episode, because we haven't missed one yet.
Bye.
By the way, coronavirus can survive for up to 24 hours on cardboard.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks without God.
Until next time, you can find us blogging and listen to past podcasts at geekswithoutgod.com. And you can follow us on Twitter at geekswithoutgod.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God.
The best is when you find on Amazon and it's the game card game.